I see my name in shiny lights. Yeah, a different city every night. Oh, I swear the world better prepare for when I'm a billionaire.
It's time to get down to business on the weekend's number one business program. Known as the King of Networking, your host, Shalom Klein, has worked with thousands of entrepreneurs and created countless jobs. So, to success, let's get down to business.
And indeed, we're all about small business jobs and entrepreneurship and business. We talk a lot about business here. You're on with Get Down to Business, and I'm your host, Shalom Klein. Remember, you can always download podcasts from Get Down to Business on my website at shalomklein.com. And while you're there, don't forget to follow me on Twitter at Shalom Klein. So my first guest on the program is an entrepreneur that Forbes has called a visionary in every sense of the word, and that's exactly the kind of guest we like to have here on Get Down to Business. I'm thrilled to be joined by Deepak Gauri, who's the founder and CEO of Labua Hotels and Resorts in both Thailand, India, and New Zealand. I learned something new. It's actually been, they've been featured in Hangover, and he is a well-known worldwide as an award-winning entrepreneur who's credited with elevating experiential luxury hospitality landscape throughout the Asian Pacific. I don't want to share any more in that introduction because I want to squeeze in every second we have. Deepak, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Shalom. Such a pleasure and honor. Really appreciate
absolutely, it. Absolutely. So I know, Labua, you have a global collection of five-star hotels and fine restaurants in Thailand, New Zealand, and India. And in fact, you've created the world's highest rooftop restaurant, which is super duper cool. So Deepak, how did you get into this line of work? I want to get to know the guests behind the microphone.
So I got into this line of work by default. So I grew up in India, and at that point of time in India, the whole focus was on expertise. So either you have to be an engineer, or you have to be a doctor, or you have to be a software programmer, and then, or either civil services, and then you're considered like a great kid. And I couldn't get into any of these things. And this is the only professional course I could get into by default. But I'm so happy and proud that I'm here because I love talking to people. I love interacting with people, and I couldn't have found a better profession than this.
That's amazing, and you're doing quite well for yourself, and indeed you have quite the reputation for what you're building. But I find it interesting because often your name is described as connected in that word of luxury, but I know that you argue that the luxury is not about a price tag, but actually in that emotional experience. Can you tell us a little bit of what you mean by that?
Okay, so for me, I think there are many stories, but I'm going to tell you my latest story. So we co-created a course with Dr. Anna Pitrasek at the Florida International University, and it was called a luxury incubator course for MBA students. And we took the MBA students to New York, Miami, and LA, and we took them to everything that would fit, like all the bling blings, all the top luxury stores, everything. And last day of the program, we took them to have a cup of coffee, which was costing $2. But this coffee shop was everybody going there. You could see all the kind of cars, Rolls Royce, Porsche, convertible, everything. But everyone has to stand in a queue. And then we took the students for a $3 scoop gelato. And on the way back, everybody had tears. And the reason they had tears, because they thought, some of them thought that they would not be able to experience luxury in the coming years. And little did they realize that we always enjoy luxury at every moment, provided we want to enjoy it. And they learned that the life is to live the life and experience the life. That's why luxury is an experience and it is an expression. But when it becomes expensive, it becomes a price tag. And that's amazing. Why I always say luxury is to live every moment. For me, the luxury is to be on your show, Shalom.
Well, I greatly appreciate it, Deepak. Again, I'm chatting with the founder and CEO of Labua Hotels and Resorts, which has a global collection of five-star hotels and fine restaurants in Thailand, New Zealand, and in India. And Deepak is the author of a brand new book. It's called A Bridge Not Too Far, Where Creativity Meets Innovation. And already we've been diving deep into the conversation and talking about some of the approaches, Deepak, that I know you have and that you where you share your story of humble beginnings that has fueled that innovative entrepreneurial spirit and your approach to business and to life, which is great. But our audience, we have a lot of small business owners. We've got a lot of folks that are developing their passion, building their reputation, and building their own relationships with their customers. And I'm curious what advice you have. I know you talk a lot about how customers need to be treated, and I know that that goes to everybody that you are privileged to have in your employ in hotels and restaurants. What advice do you have for the entrepreneurs that are tuning in?
Okay, so everyone who's listening in and everyone who has tuned in, if you don't dream, please switch off the radio. This program is not for you. But if you dream, then this program is for you because you should work hard to achieve your dream. And I'm just going to give you four facts about me. At the age of 6, I had my Coca-Cola, first Coca-Cola. I never thought a drink like that exists. At the age of 18, I would remember broccoli is a green color cauliflower, smaller in size. At the age of 21, I took my first flight. And I learned how to fasten the seatbelt. My first job at the age of 23, I went overseas and there was a booking from a company called JP Morgan, which is an investment bank. And I took down the reservation, Mr. Morgan, two people at 12 noon for lunch. And I had to buy something and somebody said, why don't you go to 7-Eleven? And they had that stuff. And I would say 7 to 11. This is my beginning. But you know what? In my beginning, I always used to dream. And I didn't have a FOPO, that is fear of people's opinion. On the contrary, I would create ROPO out of every FOPO. That is, ROPO is respect of people's opinion. So three things. Dream, most important thing. Work hard to achieve your dreams. And third, never have FOPO. That's it, Charlie.
I love it, and especially I know you and I were talking offline. Being an Army guy with acronyms, I'm very comfortable with it. So the fact that you you certainly have embraced acronyms, which means that it's as we always say, you're building it into muscle memory, something that you know you live by, and I can hear it in your voice, which is awesome. Deepak, you're the author of this book, A Bridge Not Too Far, Where Creativity Meets Innovation. You share a lot of your stories, which is great. And I know in just a couple of minutes before we wrap up, we're going to send people to your website, to Le Bois Hotels and Resorts. But the nice thing is that people may actually have actually gotten a taste of your hotels because you have actually been featured, one of your restaurants, and has actually been featured in Hangover 2. So I have to ask, because I know our listeners would be mad at me if I didn't find out the story of that. Hangover, it's a great movie and, you know, comical and all that, but I don't know if I'd associate such a wild and crazy movie with Le Bois. How did that come to be?
The producers came to us and we took the movie and we said, we need to do a marketing alliance. And we changed the time of the shoot because we never close our restaurants at the nighttime. So we did the daytime shoot. So the whole thing came along and we were the first hotel company in the world to do the marketing alliance. And Shalom, The Bridge Not Too Far is actually more than my life journey. It is a great marketing book. It is a book that everybody should read who wants to achieve something in their life. Because this book talks about not the best things in life. It tells you that they are failures also. But it also teaches people, be brave to accept your failures. And when you were talking about one of our restaurants at the Hangover Part 2, I'm very proud that Hangover Part 2 was shot there, Shalom. But I'm equally proud that we did, until today, the world's most expensive commercial dinner at one of our two-star restaurants called Mezzaluna. That was $30,000 per person plus, and we were full house.
That's incredible. That's awesome. I hear the passion in your voice, and I know that it extends certainly to, again, your customers, but to your staff as well. And Deepak, I really want to have you back on because I know that we could get into so many different areas of, like you said, marketing, which is something that our listeners want to learn a lot about. But Deepak, before we wrap up every segment, I always like to get a homework assignment, if you will, for our listeners, especially those entrepreneurs that are out there. What if they remember nothing else from this conversation, what would you like them to do in the week ahead that will set them up for success?
Remember one of your fears and convert that into respect. Just one exercise you do. And second, whenever you're crossing a bridge, remember, a bridge not too far. And once you remember a bridge not too far, you reach to your destination, and that's what life is all about. Life is not a sprint, it is a marathon. And when it is a marathon, the bridge is not too far, and there should not be any fear. And that's what the book is all about, Shalom.
I love it. Deepak, I know that if folks Google your name, they'll find a lot of links, but where would you like people to get in touch with you and find out more about the book and as well as all your important work?
DeepakOhri.com. The easiest thing, go to DeepakOhri.com. You will know everything about me. And do tell me what you read, because maybe something I have not seen or heard about myself. So you will hear everything and you'll see everything about me at DeepakOhri.com.
And I know people can get in touch with you, DeepakOhri.com, where people can get the book as well as the amazing, amazing work that you're doing. Deepak, don't be a stranger. Come back on. Get down to business real soon. But we've got to squeeze in a very quick break here on the show, all about small business jobs and entrepreneurship. We're going to come right back. Lots more entrepreneurs that you will not want to miss a minute of. Don't touch that dial. Welcome back to Get Down to Business, the show all about small business jobs and entrepreneurship. I got a real treat for you. I've got the co-author of The Connected Community, Discovering the Health, Wealth, and Power of Neighborhoods, something I'm super passionate about. I'm joined by Cormac Russell, who is a veteran practitioner of asset-based community development with experience in 36 countries, a social explorer, author, speaker, and managing director of Nurture Development. He sits on the faculty of the Asset-Based Community Development Institute at DePaul University right here in Chicago. Cormac, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So let's jump right in. What in the world is a connected community, and why should our listeners care?
Well, I think one of the things that's really striking at the moment is that when you live in a place where you're connected with your neighbors, the place you live in, and the different associations, economy and ecology, you've got a better life. So if you're interested in a more satisfied, decent life for yourself or your kids or the people you love, then a good place to start is right close up to you on your home doorstep, in a sense. And I think what's exciting about this is that it's not something that you have to have an elite degree or have a big bank account to tap into. It's there for everybody.
Which is great. Again, chatting with Cormac Russell, who together with John McKnight wrote this fantastic read, The Connected Community, Discovering the Health, Wealth, and Power of Neighborhoods. Cormac, you just talked about how it's not necessarily what images would typically conjure up in our heads. But if you don't mind, can you give us some examples of what you're referring to by connected communities?
Yeah, so there are so many, but a couple of just brief examples. So I'm calling in from Dublin, Ireland, and not too far away from my home place. There's a community of about 6,000 people that are doing it really hard at the moment. A lot of the families in this community are really struggling to pay bills. Cost of living crisis is an issue, I think, throughout the world at the moment. But what they're doing is they're getting organized at the village and neighborhood level to purchase a fleet of electric vehicles. So these are EV cars, trucks, Vespas, motorbikes. And essentially, this will take the pressure, economic pressure, off of families to own their own cars. And so what they're trying to do really is make the neighborhood the unit of change, the unit of economy, rather than the individual household, and sharing the burden of transport across the entire neighborhood, then using digital technology, basically smartphones, to organize the sharing of these electric vehicles. That reduces demand on cars. It's good for the economy, it's good for the environment, and it's good for people's pockets. So that's just one example. There are lots and lots of examples that I could share. Another one comes from Newfoundland, Fogo Island, where the entire island, after the collapse of the salmon fishery, decided to try to get organized, and they've begun using hospitality and some of their own local traditions to redefine the nature of what Fogo Island means. People are traveling from all over the world to be in Fogo Island and enjoy the hospitality. We've also got a lovely example of a community off the island of Scotland, off the coast of Scotland, I should say, an island community that went off grid in 2008 and are now producing their own energy. And basically, they were motivated by the fact that they were sick and tired of consuming energy from price gouging monopolies, companies that were distant from their communities, didn't care about their communities, and were largely just extracting money. And, you know, so these are just some of the practical examples, and there are just so many more.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that there are many examples. And obviously, this is a hot topic as we're now in 2023, coming out of an interesting period, and, you know, very, very timely to have this conversation, because I am curious, Carmack, what problems do more connected communities address, beside the obvious one, which I know is something that maybe our listeners didn't know too much about pre-2021 or pre-2020 regarding social isolation. What is connected communities addressing?
Well, it's interesting. If you take the west side of Chicago and the Austin neighborhood, which now has an initiative called Every Block a Village, that's actually addressing the issue of health. Just one example. There are other issues as well. But in terms of health, they've got the West Side Health Authority there in Austin. And that reminds us that the primary authority for an awful lot of what is health in terms of well-being is actually in the hands of local communities. A lot of our health isn't just about medicine. It's largely a social and political matter, and not just a medical issue. In fact, only 15% of what determines our health relates to medicine and, you know, the interventions of pharmacology. So most of what determines our health, 80 to 85%, is about our own personal agency, our associational life. We're 50% less likely to die prematurely next year if we become a member of a club or a group, if we weren't formally connected in with an association. So it's good for our health. We also know Robert Sampson, preeminent social scientist who studied an awful lot of police departments, including the Chicago Police Department, is very clear in saying the two things that determine a safe community, a safe neighborhood, are how many neighbors you know by first name and how often you do things together in the built environment. That is actually more of a determinant of the safety in a community than the number of police that are actually, you know, policing that neighborhood. So they're just two examples. We often hear it said, it takes a village to raise a child. Well, that's true. But how many of us are actually doing anything to raise a village? What does it actually take to create a village that raises a child, creates our health, creates our safety, looks after our ecology? We talk in the book about seven key functions, and I've listed some of them there: health, safety, looking after our local environment. But add to that our food. You know, more and more now we're seeing with the global crisis around moving goods and products, especially produce around the world, that local, in-season, tasty food production is really, really key. So again, we can, within our local communities, we can do all kinds of things that creates more food sovereignty and allows us to be able to actually have affordable, tasty food on our plates from, you know, field to fork, as they say. The same is true with care. I think increasingly we're beginning to realize that congregated care settings that are age segregating for young people or older people are not the best or most innovative way to think about care. So what are some of the ways that we're seeing neighborhoods create alternatives for caring for older people or people who are at the margins? Well, in Emilia-Romagna, which is a region in Italy, we're seeing cooperatives, cheese and textile cooperatives, reinventing how they're actually caring for their older people. So people who want to stay at age at home can do so. So in all kinds of ways, functions that we would have thought were functions that belonged in institutions are actually now being repatriated into community space, because we're beginning to realize that there are competencies in our communities that we simply, you know, they were invisible. And a lot of our work is making those invisible capacities visible and vibrant.
Absolutely. You know, it's said that it takes a village. And I know that so many solutions to many of the problems that we're facing are, as you argue in the book, The Connected Community. Some of those solutions are really just a doorstep or a knock away, which is fantastic. So Carmack, we're running out of time over here. And I'm curious if you can very, very briefly provide a couple of practical tips for those interested in creating a more connected neighborhood where they live.
Great question. Well, I think one of the first things to recognize is that the community is already organized in lots of practical ways. So try to find out where the warm spots are, where are people gathering up, where are the bumping places, where are the gathering spaces, and just get yourself invited along. Go along, be curious. The second is don't look for leaders, look for connectors. There are connectors in every community. These are people who are great at building relationships. They're trusting, they're gift-centered, and they want to hear from you. The third is to assume that your community is actually waiting for you to reach out. In all kinds of ways, there's a welcome. And the fourth is to be willing to welcome the stranger at the edge. We're thinking about communities that encourage diversity and difference and are actually comfortable and confident with people who have different opinions to them. So always keep a welcome for the stranger at the edge.
Amazing. Well, I don't want to share all of the secrets of this fantastic read, The Connected Community. I know folks can learn a lot more about you, Carmaker, as well as the amazing work that you're doing in across many organizations through your website. What website is that, and where can we find the book?
So the two websites that are most useful, one is my website, which is nurturedevelopment.org, and that will give you lots of free information. And the book has its own dedicated website, which is called theconnected.community, theconnected.community. So if you punch that into the usual search engines, you'll find the book, lots of material for free as well, and some games and practical things to get you going in your
Fantastic.
Own neighborhood. Lots of people are encouraging libraries to connect their communities, get the books. So lots of practical ways to be involved.
Absolutely. Carmack Russell, thanks so much for joining us. We'll be right back and get down to business. Welcome back to Get Down to Business, the show all about small business jobs and entrepreneurship, and most importantly, the home of the guru. That's right, the health insurance guru, Tom Mirabali, who you could always reach 7 days a week, almost 24 hours a day, 630-863-3477. Tom, welcome back to the program.
How you guys doing over there?
You know, fantastic. I think you're running around in beautiful weather, but leaving the rest of us hanging. But Tom, you like we said, you're accessible. You answer your phone. You help folks with their health insurance, which is what I want to spend a couple of minutes talking to you about. Tom, what is new and exciting in the world of health insurance and coverage these days?
Well, as far as the Unaffordable Care Act is concerned, it went up to $9,300. Cash out of pocket before the plan starts to cover at 100%. I'm still down there at 2,500 on my PPO plans through Golden Rule United Healthcare. And as you know, my plans do not include the mandatory maternity coverage, but you have to go through underwriting. So if you have insulin-dependent diabetes or cancer within the last 5 years, you're not going to get my plan. I would refer you to the Affordable Care Act and see how that goes. But a lot of doctors are not taking the Affordable Care Act. That's why I call it the Unaffordable Care Act, because you go to a doctor and they say, oh, that's not covered. You know, I mean, what good is it? It's getting worse and worse year after year.
Well, that's important. And I know that you know how to direct people if they need that sort of that guaranteed acceptance based on pre-existing conditions. But also if folks don't have a need for certain coverages, you are able to find them. The affordable options, which is really important. So, Tom, I always love to pick your brain about the calls that are coming in into the Tom Mirabali Health Insurance Hotline, which again is 630-863-3477. What kind of questions or random inquiries are coming in that may be relevant and applicable to some of our listeners?
Well, they all ask if I'm affiliated with the Affordable Care Act, and I say no. But I do know about the Affordable Care Act. I have to know because I do groups. And in groups, there are people with pre-existing conditions that they, you know, they have to take the people with the pre-existing conditions, which is the only good thing about the Affordable Care Act. Now, once they get into a group, if they do have or have a spouse or children with pre-existing conditions, the group can take them on anytime during the year and cover all their pre-existing conditions. Now, the unfortunate part about the group is that when they come up for renewal and they see this child's got this, this man has that, the wife has this, the wife is 3 months pregnant, et cetera, et cetera. The rates go up for the entire group. So that's kind of the, I don't know, the stab in the back, you know, that that happens with group plans. But at least they get the coverage for pre-existing.
Sure. And we're having this conversation, Tom, at the end of February 23, which sort of important timeline. I can't believe Q1 of 2023 is already almost out the door. Are there any, call it legislation or changes that you are tracking and that you want to make folks aware of? Any timelines that you think people should be aware of as it relates to either their family's medical coverage or their business medical coverage?
Well, on both plans, both situations, I can get people with pre-existing conditions on in the individual market. Let's say, for example, a man, 63 years old, a wife, 61, a son, 23, and a girl, 21. Let's say the husband has insulin-dependent diabetes. Well, what I can do is put that person on the Affordable Care Act through Blue Cross Blue Shield at around $900 a month. And the rest of the family, they can go on the short-term major medical renewable plans at any time during the year. And in that particular case, it would cut down their bill dramatically. For example, if all four of those people were on the ACA, with the $9,100 total cash out of pocket for this year, $18,200 for the family, that cost would be $2,350. If I put them on my Golden Rule United Healthcare family plan with a $5,000 cumulative deductible, in other words, all four people contribute to the $5,000 cumulative deductible, that cost is $1,435 a month. So, I mean, where are you going to go? You're saving $1,000 a month just in the premium, and then they have a cumulative $5,000 deductible instead of a total out-of-pocket of $18,200. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty big mm-hmm. difference in dollars.
Sure is. And that's why we love you, Tom, because you keep track of these things so we don't have to. And with so much good information, you shop around and make sure that everybody's getting the coverage that they need for the prices that they can afford, which is great. Again, I've been chatting with the guru of everything health insurance, Tom Mirabali. Tom, I want to make sure our listeners can get in touch with you. What is your phone number?
630-863-3477. Again, that's 630-863-3477. I'm available 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. If I don't answer the phone for whatever reason, leave a message and I will get back to you as soon as I get back in the office.
Fantastic. And the website is, I know, healthplanchicago.com. But again, 630-863-3477. Tom Mirabali, appreciate you as always joining us. I look forward to having you back on in a couple of weeks to continue our conversation about everything health insurance. We'll be right back on Get Down to Business. Welcome back to Get Down to Business, the show all about small business, jobs, and entrepreneurship. We get on my website, sheldonkline.com, to download the past 10 plus years of shows. But I will say that in all of those 10 years, I have never had a designer of an award-winning escape room. And that's exactly what I have today. I've got Tommy Hunton, a designer of Stash House. He is a master craftsman of experienced design, weaving storytelling, game design to create memorable, playable experiences, which is what we'll talk about. Tommy, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. I'm an honor. It's an honor to be a first.
Absolutely. I know you have a lot of experience, so not a first in for you. I know you've worked as a creator and consultant with companies like Disney, Google, Lionsgate, and Warner Brothers. I mean, Tommy, obvious question over here, but how did you get into this line of work and become so passionate about it?
It was tricky. I came out to LA to be a writer originally, and I found, you know, I loved creating stories, but the film and TV industry I felt was just I didn't feel the same passion about the business side of it as I did creating. So I got kind of stuck in a rock and a hard place because I loved the business of storytelling, but I didn't like the business itself. And so immersive interactive entertainment really gave me a chance to create stories and games that allow people to step into the stories. And it was a very new business. The model for immersive interactive experiences, there really wasn't one. So it was a chance to really be on the forefront of something crazy. And it was a little scary because, yes, there was no path. You know, that's a double-edged sword. You get the chance to blaze your own trail, but you're not guaranteed there's going to be a trail to go down. So it was exciting. And I'm lucky that, yeah, the industry was really taking off right when I got started. And so I was able to jump in early.
Absolutely. And I know folks Google you, they'll find a lot about the amazing work you're doing, which will, of course, send our listeners over to you. But Tommy, you describe yourself as an experienced designer. What does that actually mean?
Yeah, it's kind of a phrase that can be used to describe a lot of things. For me, it is that I make experiences. Now, that can be anything from a live action location-based experience like an escape room to a video game that is played over a phone or over a computer, or a hybrid that allows people to connect across, you know, time and space, where you have people physically in a location engaging with someone all over, you know, around the world. There is no one size fits all. It's making an experience people can have where you're not just reading passively about a story or watching it, you're engaging in it and affecting it.
So, you know, it's interesting. I mentioned in your initial intro that you were a designer of an award-winning escape room. I know you've designed a lot of amazing experiences, which we'll talk a little bit more about as the conversation goes on. Why do you believe escape rooms are so popular?
I think there's something about people being tied to screens so much that when you give them the chance to disconnect from a screen and go into a real space and connect with other people and problem solve, there is an adrenaline rush that you get that you don't get from being connected to a screen. There's something about doing it in real life, the tactile nature of it, going out with friends. You know, we're hairless apes living in these giant concrete cities. We don't get to go on mammoth hunts. We don't do things that as a tribe or as a people, you know, as a family unit, that you have these victories. You know, your average day is filled with, you know, paperwork and work and the mundane, and the chance to have an adventure that fills you with excitement that, you know, is not really saving the world, but in that moment, you feel like you are. There's something really addictive about it. And seeing people of all kinds, of all ages, being able to feel connected and special and empowered, you know, it's addictive, and people want those because you don't get those in your daily life.
Absolutely. I'm chatting with Tommy Hunton, as we said earlier, an experienced designer who has worked as a creator and consultant with companies such as Disney, Google, Lionsgate, and Warner Brothers. And the list goes on and on, which is great. So I want to understand, you know, on the practical side for our listeners who are small business owners, entrepreneurs, how is immersive entertainment, you've used that term earlier in the conversation, useful for team building and relational skills? And again, why does it matter to our listeners?
Yeah, I used to be skeptical because, you know, everyone and their dog goes after team building because it's a big market. But having seen immersive interactive experiences firsthand, both as an audience member and a creator, you can see, you know, the primal aspects of how groups actually engage. There's an element of, for a problem to be overcome, the group has to be willing to get rid of ego. And we know that's not possible in a lot of organizational structures, but you can pretty quickly root out who the cause is, you know, or what's happening. You know, the idea that if you see a solution in your head and you're like, hey, what if it's this? And someone's like, oh, cool. And they get inspired by your idea and go, oh yeah, I think you're right, but here's it. How about this? And you toss out different ways of solving. That requires people to be in concert, to listen, to respect each other. I've got a group of friends, we've played hundreds of escape rooms and immersive experiences, and we have no ego. We can solve problems a lot easier because there's no, you know, sunk cost of me going, oh, it's got to be my idea. We want to achieve things as a group. And when a group dynamic happens where someone insists on being right or not listening to other people, it just shows the weaknesses or cracks in how people communicate and problem solve. Now, the challenge is what you do with that information and how you resolve it. But it's really easy to notice how people actually are working as a team, especially when it's pointed out to them. Because when you're in the adrenaline pumping moment, you're not really aware of what you're doing. But afterwards, when you watch the quote unquote game tape and you can talk about, you know, hey, someone tossed an idea, no one listened. And that ended up being the right idea. Or you made a mistake. And instead of saying maybe it's something else, you kept going down that road. You can really point out these flaws that do reveal a lot of red flags in how businesses and companies and teams at large communicate.
Absolutely. I'm going to have to cut to our break in just a minute, and then we'll continue our conversation. Of course, we're talking about experiences and why it matters. But Tommy, real quick, before we cut to that break, what's the coolest experience you've had? What are some of the things that you like to do and maybe share that with our listeners?
Oh, I love traveling anywhere in the world. I will go try an immersive experience. And I've seen stuff all over the world that are just is amazing. So I would say it's not just one individual thing. It's seeing how even in small towns and huge cities, you can see people really creating businesses out of, you know, whole cloth storytelling and experiences anywhere in the world. And so anyone can do it. That's the part I think is most inspiring, is seeing that it doesn't matter where you are, people are making cool work.
So cool. Anybody indeed can do it. We've got to cut to a very quick break here on the show about small business jobs and entrepreneurship. Again, get on your favorite podcast app, subscribe, rate, review, and share. It's the easiest way for you to be alerted when a new episode drops. We'll be right back talking about experiences when we return and get down to business in just a moment. Hey, welcome back to Get Down to Business, the show all about small business jobs and entrepreneurship. Continuing our conversation with Tommy Hunton, designer of the award-winning Escape Room Stash House, master craftsman, experienced design, weaving, storytelling, and game design to create memorable, playable experiences. We're having a great conversation talking about why this matters to entrepreneurs like everybody tuning in. But I am really curious about experiences. You just alluded to it when we talked about your own experiences that you like. Do you find that people value experiences more than stuff?
I do, more and more, especially with people looking to give gifts or have moments with family. The chance to go have an adventure is a memory that will last a lot longer than a tangible object or a tactile object. The idea that you're able to have memories as a family, you know, as a friend group, as a couple on a date. Yeah, you can see that people are really valuing the moment. And not only that, it's not only paying for an experience, it's they're willing to go to venues or places that have, you know, the chance to give them a warm fuzzy. You're looking at this retail, you're looking at this across every really market, whether it's, you know, commercial real estate, whether it's, you know, grocery shopping or going to buy clothes. So much of what we do now is online that any business that can make an experience worth going to in person is worth it, because people do like going places. Yes, websites can have cool, exciting bells and whistles and features that make you happy to buy things, but there's nothing quite like us as human beings going in a space and exploring and having the chance to have our senses tingled, because going to a website just doesn't have the same effect. So just looking at how a lot of companies are investing and a lot of larger real estate areas are investing in creating experiences and building as an anchor in a downtown or shopping mall areas, an experience that you have to go do in person. And that creates foot traffic, an ecosystem of people that after they do their experience, they want to talk about it. They want to get a drink. They want to eat. They want to maybe shop while they're there, you know, maybe get there early and get a coffee. There's so many things that this is like a watering hole, if you will, that people come to and then they hang out. So to me, it's not just about the idea of people doing it. It's also about the benefit of what other businesses can succeed because of this.
Sure. And that's a perfect segue in talking about entertainment. Again, Tommy, your portfolio is long, working with a lot of big name companies. But I'm curious your perspective now, sort of being that consultant, being able to sort of envision the future of entertainment. Tommy, what do you think it looks like?
I think it looks strong. I think the level of technology that's coming out that gives people the chance to go places. I mean, looking at obviously Disney and their theme parks are next level, but you're looking at also smaller companies trying stuff. And that's what's amazing about the experience ecosystem. You know, looking at, you know, everything from the companies that were started in garages, look at Amazon, look at, you know, Apple. You know, you look at filmmakers that started making movies with their own home cameras. You know, the experience industry is the same thing. You have the big titans of the industry, but you have a lot of younger innovators making things in garages and in college dorms and in trying storytelling and tech techniques that are using the future of sort of both what people can do with technology and then also sort of what you can do with space. And the earlier and younger people begin to make stuff, the more innovative it is. So I love that there's this ecosystem of younger creators taking college courses and learning how to do engineering and storytelling and, you know, programmable technology, wearables, projection mapping, all this really cool tech out there that people are able to play with. And that's what's amazing. In experience design, you don't have to paint with every color. You can use one or two techniques. And that's what's cool, seeing all the experimentation in the space.
Well, Tommy, we're out of time, but we're not done with the conversation, because folks can get in touch with you through your website and learn all about the amazing things in the world of experience design, as well as entertainment. Tommy, how can we reach you, and what is that website?
It's just my name, TommyHonton.com, TommyHonton.com.
TommyHunton.com. Definitely check out Tommy because I know, Tommy, you're going to be a very much part of the conversation of the next big thing in the world of experiences and entertainment. Thanks so much for sharing it with our listeners. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And that's a wrap for us here on the show, all about small business, jobs, and entrepreneurship. As I mentioned earlier, make sure you subscribe, rate, review, and share on your favorite podcast app. Get on my website, sheldonkline.com. Check out all of our amazing guests we've had on today. We will link to all of them in the show notes. We'll be back next Sunday right here on AM560. The Answer in Chicago at 6 p.m. Central Time in Chicago or on your favorite podcast app. To success, let's get down to business.